Good evening. Good to be back with you all here at 31W once again. I appreciate my brother and the work that he's doing over here. Appreciate the support that was offered with the work here in the country of India. Now, we may have some time for questions at the end. I'll just sort of play that by ear. But if we don't get a chance here collectively in this group to run questions through, then I'd be happy after the service to talk with you more about the work out this way. So I was there in India in the month of February. It was my third preaching trip to the country of India. And to this particular point, in my travels out that way, the preaching work has largely been confined to the south central region of India. But as I talked here with Balaswamy, the translator that I work with out that way, we have discussed plans for an upcoming fourth preaching trip wherein we would go up to New Delhi and perhaps also to the island of Sri Lanka. But with southern India being the main focus up to this particular point, my first trip was back in 2007, and I flew into Bangalore, and we did some preaching in Bangalore, and then we also went up to a place called Kurnool, where we trained a good number of preachers, helped to ground them and solidify them in the Word of Truth. And then in 2016, so just a few years back, I had another trip out this way and flew into Bangalore, but then went down southwest to Mysore and did some preaching in Mysore. And then we took a charter plane and went over to Vijayawada, where we did some preaching there. So this particular trip now, this third trip, I flew into Chennai by way of a connection in Bombay. And after a week in Chennai, preaching there, we went over to Kadapa and did some preaching there as well. Now, it just hits you like a heat wave when you leave the airport over there, and we're very much in the tropical zone. We're very much there near the equator, and so while it happened to be quite cold up over here in Kentucky, temperatures being low, over there, easily you're talking about upwards in the 90s. And in Kadapa, I managed to take a good reading of the temperature that was there. And I noticed that by the time that Sunday would arrive, it would be at about 102 degrees in the month of February, early February. Hard for us to imagine. So this is the second most populated country in the world. China is still the undisputed champion here with respect to population dynamics. You have 1,420,000,000 people that live there in China. But India is not far behind at all. You have about 1,370,000,000 people living there. To put all that into perspective for us, over here in the great U.S. of A., we have a whopping 330 million. And we are actually the third largest country in the world. But you see, we fall short by over a billion in comparison there with India or China. And truth be told, I would say that India is slated to become the largest country in the world pretty soon. Because the growth rate is at about 4% there in India, whereas there with China, it seems like they've had discussions about laws and legislation there limiting the family size. They're wanting ideally maybe just one child there per family. India does not have any such regulation at all. And so I don't quite know exactly when that will be, but India will probably overtake China in time to come. What was the purpose of this preaching trip? Well, we had several objectives. Number one, we wanted to train and teach preachers of the gospel so that they could carry on the work after we would leave. We wanted to encourage faithful Christians, and so we would go to sound congregations and minister there to the members and edify them as we proclaimed the Word of God. And we'd also want to study with denominational people and Hindus as well. Hinduism is very strong there within India, and during the course of this presentation we will say a few words there about that. But India is a very, very strange land to Western eyes. If you were to go over there, this would feel much like sensory overload. You would just be bombarded with new sights and sounds and smells, etc., etc., to where it would be a little discombobulating for you. And that can take its toll after just a few days. But you just keep your eyes open as you walk out of the hotel in the day, and it's like nonstop action for us. Now, they might be bored because this is every day for them, but for us, this is just totally surreal. You kind of feel like you've entered into some type of alternate reality of sorts. Over there, one of their customs would be to bobble the head. I just call this the Indian head bobble. And it is strange to my eyes. It would be strange to yours. But everybody out there does this. They just do it. And when I first went back in 2007, no one gave me the heads up about this. No pun intended. And so as I'm there and meeting with some native preachers, they were curious about who I was and where I'd come from. And so I was trying to answer those questions one by one. And I'd mentioned that I was from the state of Kentucky at that time. And so I said, do you understand this? Do you understand what I'm telling you? And they'd go like that. So I said, well, I'm going to take another run at this here now. All right. Have you heard of Kentucky Fried Chicken? Maybe Kentucky Fried Chicken? So have you heard about the Kentucky Derby? And I was, at that point, I was about ready to give up. And it was later explained to me there at the hotel where I was staying. My American travel companion said, oh, they were acknowledging that they understood all that you were saying. And that just blew me away. I said, what on earth? I want to know then, how do they say no? And I was told it's like this. It's like a figure eight. So I'm lost. I give up. I don't quite know exactly how I feel about this, because didn't Jesus say that we're to let our yes be yes and our no be no? Seems like they play fast and loose with that law there. It is just the wild, wild east out over here. You can be there in the big city. This is out here in Chennai. And you can just be driving along, and next you know, there's roosters and chickens coming out into the street. I'm not talking about being out there in the rural parts. We're talking about the big city. This is what you see on a daily basis. You'll have pigs and swine that are just moseying around, poking their heads out of dumpsters. You could technically go up to these and pet them if you wanted to. And you've got cows and bulls that are out there in the street. They like to go up there to the medians often. And you would be in trouble if ever you were to collide with one of those animals. I mean, legally speaking, if you try to do a bit of a hit and run, they will track you down. You see, because these animals will always have the right of way out over there. Now, here in America, that's totally different. You know, if you hit a cow, then who's responsible there? It's the owner of the animal. But over there in India, no, they don't understand that concept at all. And I was trying to convince my translator, Balaswamy, as to the justice behind this, but no, he wasn't buying it at all. No. No, if you hit that animal, you're at fault. And you just see them everywhere. And sometimes they're decorated in very ornate ways, in ritual settings. They get very creative. Now, here in America, we can go to the lake and feed the ducks. You can feed the birds, right? But over there in India, you could feed the monkeys if you wanted to. And as we were driving out to one of our preaching appointments way out there in the country, we noticed that there was a motorcyclist who had a bag of bread, and he was feeding all of these monkeys. There was upwards about 30 that were there, and so we stopped, and I got to get out of the vehicle, and here's a picture of Prabhu, one of our travel companions, doing the same, and we got some bread, and we started to feed the monkeys. It leads to some interesting dynamics and situations there where there's no way you could dream this up on your own. But one particular day I was preaching in a facility and I was in rhythm. I was on autopilot just going along with the preaching, and Balaswami was translating for me. And all of a sudden I hear like a loud thud. I mean, whoa, that really caught my attention, everyone's attention. And it sounded to me like maybe someone out in the hallway had a bad fall. Maybe grabbed onto some furniture as well and pulled it down. But as it turns out, when we poked our heads out there into the hallway, here's what we found. Little monkeys had gotten into that facility there, and they had taken the water cooler that was there for the preachers that had traveled far to be present. They were trying to get some of the water there, and so it was yanked down, and that's what made that loud crashing noise. Like I say, you just have to keep the camera rolling, because you're going to see a lot of wild, wild things that would have never entered your imagination out here. I felt sorry for the preachers. I hope that they were able to find a replacement water cooler somewhere nearby. The rickshaws are ubiquitous out there. They're just all over the place, by the dozens, by the hundreds. You can be there in the city and you could just start to count them up and you would not be able to hardly finish. These are ideal for their transportation. The rickshaw going in the way back would have been basically like a wagon that was pulled by a man. And so you'd have the passengers get there in the back, and he would just sort of cart them along. But with the Second World War, these started to be made en masse out over there. And they quickly took over the whole country of India. And so you have three wheels here, and people will go all over the place with the rickshaw. Traffic is terrible. I know it could get quite bad there in Nashville, but if you spend a day or two out in India, out in one of the big cities there, you will probably never complain again. They know how to take just two lanes and turn it into like a 5 or 6 lane super freeway. And as far as rules, I've not really been able to detect much there. I mean, you could pass on the left, pass on the right, just however you want to do it, however you can squeeze in. Even coming along there with our driver in Chennai, I knew eventually we're probably going to hit somebody. And sure enough, that happened. That happened. We hit a motorcyclist. But it was interesting. I can't speak a word of Telugu, but I could tell they were trying to interact with each other here, you know, having some words with each other back and forth. But we didn't pull over. He didn't pull over. I mean, you just keep going, even though we had sideswiped him. Yeah. And you can just see how many motorcyclists are out there on the street at any given day. Congestion nightmares, right? And this is quite different from our standpoint. If you're going to honk the horn, you better have a pretty good reason for doing that out here. But over there, it's right the opposite. They kind of want you to lay on that horn, blow that horn. You see, you could be coming from either direction trying to pass a vehicle. And so it gives the one who's in front of you a bit of a heads up that, oh, you're back there, you're behind there. And so nonstop, you're hearing those horns sounding off. And it can be quite frustrating there in the evening when you're at the hotel trying to get a good night's sleep. And that's nearly impossible because all these horns are blowing off there in the city. The driver was going pretty fast, and there was an oil tanker that pulled out there in front of us. And I was like, I hope he can slam on these brakes. Sure enough, he did. But that did startle me. You could make out there in the back of this tanker, flammable. So you want to, if you can, be very cautious around that one there. Do not go flying into it. I got a bit of a kick out of this here. It must have been that we were somewhat near a school district. And when you look there at their signs for the crossing for children, it seems a little more energetic to me than what you'd have out here. And this was at different places, I noticed, there within the city. You could see the markers for watching out there for children crossing the road. And so you could think here about our sign. Our sign here in the United States seems a little more tame, but this is their sign out over there. And just as you think about the speeding vehicles and all, you look at that and you say, oh, these poor little babies, I mean, they're having to dart around and duck and dodge vehicles hanging on for dear life. Yeah. Idolatry is everywhere that you go out there. So many gods and goddesses within the Hindu religion. And on about every street corner out there, you can see a shrine of some type where you could come there and offer prayers or leave a monetary donation in rupees. You will have temples all over the place. They have an elephant-headed god, which is the most popular god out over there, Ganesha by name. And Ganesha will often be seen pictured on a chariot. And the chariot is being pulled by a rat. And so the rat itself is also taken to be a god out over there, and they have temples dedicated to the rat. When we went out to preach in the remote parts, we were headed out to Tirukalukundram. And what caught my eye here with this particular drive was that we found a place where a lot of these idols were made and manufactured. And I'm not kidding, but that this place stretched out for miles and miles and miles. Now, it has to be that these idols are painted somewhere else, because I did not see a single one that was colored up. But here they were definitely made and shipped out. And we even got to see an idol maker there at work. And I could not help but myself think about the statement that's found there with the prophet Isaiah, where he talked about how a person who's going to make an idol has a deceived heart. And he is so duped by this, he is so blinded by it, that he cannot say, is there not a lie in my right hand? Yeah. Very sad, very tragic. About 80% of India is Hindu. Now just do some of the math on that, all right? And I'm not asking you to necessarily bust out the calculator. But what did we say here was the population of India? 1,370,000,000 people, right? China's at 1,420,000,000. So what's 80% of 1,370,000,000?
Over a billion.
Over a billion. That's exactly right. Now, we talk about the U.S. having about 330 million people. If you multiply that by three, you've got under a billion, about 990 million, correct? So now just picture that for a brief moment. Think about everybody that you've ever known here in the United States. I mean, even as you travel abroad, from sea to shining sea, from California to the New York Island, picture every last one of them being Hindu. And then multiplying that threefold. Now you're starting to get a better impression of what's really going on in this world. And this is why we have to keep going back there to preach the gospel of Christ. I mean, it's just an alternate reality of sorts, but not a utopia, more of a dystopian type of a setup here. Now, the restoration movement is very much in the early stages there within India. And over here in Chennai, we started out with some preacher training. And what I soon realized is that really and truly, a number of the men who come to these studies here might in fact be sound preachers of the gospel, But you're also going to have quite a few denominational people that are showing up. And it was interesting to me, as I got a little sheet of paper here with the names of those who were present, I saw with at least four of those names the little prefix title there of Reverend. Reverend. So I said, huh. Let me see a show of hands here. I was telling this to them. Who here is a member of the Lord's church, the church of Christ, the church of Christ? Let me tell you, all the hands went up. And even there with Paul Raj, who's standing there in the back, I mean, he just got a very zealous fellow. He was there and he said, "We're all church of Christ, brother. All church of Christ." So I said, "All right, well, I have some questions if I might." Okay. And I'm just going to take the first of the names that I see here with Reverend at the front. Reverend Stephen. All right, not this one here, but there in the purple shirt. There in the purple shirt up front. That was Stephen, and his son Francis is there in the blue shirt. And Francis did some of the translating for me while I was here at this particular facility. But I said there with Stephen, I said, "Stephen, all right, how did you come to be a reverend?" And of course, Balaswamy is having to translate all this for me here. And he was just really quiet, didn't say anything. I said, "Let's go in our Bibles to Psalm 111, verse 9. And I had us all turn over there. Now that's the only place you can find the word reverend applied to somebody. And who has that name? Holy and reverend is your name." Right. Now see, when I was asking him then, all right, so how'd you come to be a reverend? Now he began to chuckle kind of nervously, like he didn't know what to say to this here. And others started to laugh too. I'm kind of making the point here that it was starting to penetrate. They hadn't thought about this. Now, of course, I was sort of crossing my fingers because I know that it's clear in the English language when you're reading from the King James Bible, but they don't have the King James Bible over there. It's in Telugu. But still, they were able to connect the dots on this. And so, just little by little, we have to do teaching on some basic and fundamental concepts. Stephen was very nice. At the close of one study, he invited me over there to the congregation that he was a part of, and he said that I could do some preaching at over there. But you can see here now, as Francis is doing some translating here for me, that they happen to have a Christmas tree up here. A Christmas tree. So, guess what I had to kind of sort of touch on in passing? I had to talk about how when you look at the New Testament church, you do not read about them celebrating Christmas or elevating certain days above other days. It was Sunday that was the day of worship. They did not have a special Sunday above other Sundays, etc., etc. And as we were leaving, I noticed that the paint was somewhat fainter here, but you could make out that it said House of Prayer Warriors, House of Prayer Warriors. Unique opportunities are afforded you, because out here in the States, it would not be very likely that you could actually go into a denomination and preach the pure gospel of Christ. They would not really stand for that. But over there, they're happy to have you come and speak for them. And so talking about the restoration movement being there in its early stages and phases, you see that in a lot of places. You'll have instrumental music and worship that is used. And so we have to touch on that and preach on that. You'll see images of Jesus that are put up. And yes, they are burning incense to these pictures, part of their practices. And I think they started to pick up on how we were doing a lot of teaching about this. Because we started to notice that the instruments, while they were still present in those buildings, they were kind of being tucked away in different places. Now, this person forgot to really hide the timbrel here, but you can see they got a drum back there between the wall and the lectern. We're doing what we can to try to enlighten them about New Testament Christianity. This particular place in a remote village would have contained the largest number of children that we ended up preaching to. And the fellow who was our host, he's off there to the left. after preaching there. He wanted us to come there to his house. We're usually exhausted mentally. We are spent, but very often they still want us to come and refresh ourselves there at their place before heading back. And sometimes we're driving a good hour and a half or more just to be there. So we're kind of tired, but we still try to accommodate that. But you can't hardly keep the power up over there. The power goes out just so frequently. And that happened over there at this house. And so they just got out a candle and lit the candle and put it right there without any platform underneath it. It's just right there balancing on the floor. And after we got done eating over there, then he wanted to take me by some property. They were working on a building. They wanted this here to be a future church building. And so he wanted me to say a prayer there on behalf of the whole project. And I'm looking around here, but then all of a sudden I had noticed something here. They had this for a sign, Church of South India. Now, that'd be comparable to like the Church of England. We're talking about the Church of India over here. And St. Peter's Church was the name here for it. So I said, all right, well, let me go ahead and have a word of prayer here with you. And in that prayer, I pointed out, God, we thank you for your Son, Jesus Christ, and for the church that he established, and it is named after him, for he is the owner of it. And we know, Father, that this is not a church that belongs to any man, even any apostle. So little by little, continuing with the teaching here. In Chennai, we met with Brother Shakar. He is a good, faithful gospel preacher. He has his work cut out for him, as you might imagine. Balaswamy, my translator, is over there to the left. And then over there on the other side, right, you have Prabhu. Prabhu is not yet a Christian, but Brother Shakar is working with him, trying to study with him, and it's hoped that in time to come he will be baptized for the remission of his sins and attending faithfully at a sound Church of Christ. But Prabhu is a good organizer, and so he helped to arrange a lot of the meetings that we would have in different villages. Here was the washroom there at the hotel where I was staying at in Chennai. What jumps out immediately at you? You have no bathtub here, do you? In all the trips that I've ever made there to India, you have no bathtub at all there in the washroom. Instead, you'll have a bucket that's there, and so you do what's called a splash bath. But that water is like freezing cold. It's just really, really cold. Now, you'd think that, well, with it being hot outside, that maybe you'd appreciate that. But I don't want to be under there for a good extended period of time, right? Now, they do have a water heater. But what was really sorry about this setup is that it would take about 24 hours to get hot again. And when the green light came on, I knew that it was ready. But the hot water lasted only about 2 to 3 minutes. And then it went ice cold once again. So, as you have a good steady stream of a hot shower in the evening, you count your blessing. You count your blessing. This was one of my best friends out there, all right? What is this? This is an AC unit. The temperatures are so hot over there that it will eventually permeate through the walls. And your room where you're staying can become like an oven. And so it's absolutely vital for an American to have a good, solid working AC unit. But as I said, the power goes out often, maybe a couple times a day. And so when that happens, panic can start to set in because you're warming up a little too fast. If you do not care for bugs at all, then really India is not a place that you want to be. I got pretty good in the end with rolling up the bath towel in the hotel room and just swatting there like Indiana Jones at the walls to get these little mosquitoes. And they would just get in through the vents and through the ducts. There was little I could do about it. I would have my body caked with insect repellent, but they would still find ways to get to me. This particular one that I photographed here, I'd actually grabbed a pillow and I'd run the pillow steamroller-like over the mosquito. And I went back to bed. And in about 20 minutes, I got up. Now, this was just a few, maybe 2-3 feet away from my face, from my nose. And when I woke back up, it was looking like this. Like, are you kidding me? Like a mosquito from the devil's domain. I mean, it's just not going to die. So I had to grab that pillow and finish the job on the mosquito. And try as I would to protect myself, could only get so far. The mosquito bites will soon dissipate and disappear within maybe an hour or so. But I got bit by a spider. It had to have been late at night that it had happened. So I just woke up and there was this throbbing pain down there at the base of my palm. And that lasted for a good 2 weeks. What do we eat over there? This is what's called a dosha. It's a bit like a greasy, super thin pancake. It's not my favorite by any stretch of the imagination. And you eat the dosha there with chutney sauce, or also sambar is also that's very popular with the dish. You have a little bit of potatoes that are there wrapped up in the middle, and that's the extent of it. You can see that I'm trying to eke out a smile here. And what's also interesting, too, is that banana leaves will form their plates for them. So they will just bring out the rice and the curry sauces and just plop it right there on the banana leaves. Here you can see Balaswamy, my translator, looking at the menu. Maybe he's trying to figure out what dosha he'd like to order. Chairs are optional. I mean, many of them you'll just sit right there on the floor. And you'll also see, too, that utensils are missing. They are just very good and skilled at eating with their fingers. They can't quite understand why we would want to have a spoon and a fork and a knife. It doesn't really make much sense to them. And if ever you get to see this, now, you wouldn't really see it here in our country, even among Indian people, but over there, everyone is doing this, and they get so good with their hand. I'm going to try to imitate it as best as possible, but it's this type of emotion where they kind of become like a human vacuum cleaner, and they just know how to chuck it in there real quickly. And I think they flick the wrist a little bit there to maybe get some of the excess curry off, but then they just go right back at it, and it is a sight to behold, I tell you that. So Brother Shakar took us there to where his congregation would meet at. And this is out in Sholin Ganilar. You can see the straw and grass that's used there for the roofs. Here's the meeting house. You're looking at it. You thought that the building here might be quite small. Can you imagine meeting over here? I would say that it was about maybe 7 feet wide. That might be quite judicious. 7 feet, I'd say, perhaps, and about 21 feet long, and that was about it. And here Shakar is pouring some water for Balaswamy, who would soon be translating. When they have a start time, all right, it's somewhat negotiable. Okay, so it might say, all right, we're going to show up here at 9 o'clock in the morning. Well, people start to arrive closer to 10. I mean, you're talking about the vast majority of the congregation. So what they do then is they love to sing. And so you'll have several of them that will get up front and they will sing as they wait for others to arrive. And here you can see now more people pouring in to the meeting house. Here's Brother Shakar with his family. Beautiful son and daughter. And I call your attention here to this woman, this older woman. I'm a smaller fellow as it is, but I mean, people are nearly pygmy-sized here. They're really small. And she wanted prayers after the service there because she has bad migraines and she has bad eyesight. And so I said, all right, I'll do that. And it was a reminder that every time you go there, this happens. You have a bit of a parade of people coming up to you wanting a special prayer said on their behalf. So I said a prayer there for her. There was also a prayer I led for David, a younger man here who suffers from mental retardation caused by dengue fever in the long ago. And this girl over here, she wanted a prayer said for her. She has a hole in her heart. You have a poor healthcare system in place there, and so there's a lot of handicaps and disabilities that are seen among the people there. But everyone wants prayers, and here there was a couple that came up to me, and they learned that I preached. I don't know what religious affiliation that they would have had, but they wanted a prayer said because they were a newlywed couple, and so they wanted prayers for their marriage. In one particular place, way out in the country, we were flagged over by a couple. They wanted us to come there into the house. And you're looking here at a couple that had been trying to have children for 14 years. 14 years. So they wanted a prayer said for them. And Prasam, who was our driver out there in Kadapa, it's my understanding that he was converted out of Seventh-day Adventism about 5 years ago. But there's still a huge language barrier here. There's 42 different languages spoken there in India. And so as I'm riding up there in the front, they're putting me as close as possible to the air in the vehicle, right, for my own well-being. But it's such a quiet ride because I don't know how to interact with him at all, nor he with me. But they want you to come by the house there. So Prasam wanted me there so that I could say prayers for his children. And he had a larger family too. So I went ahead and I did that, and Balaswamy is interpreting for me. You would think that maybe if you could just pray for the family, that should be enough. But no, one by one. All right, here's the son. Here's another. And here's a daughter now. All right, can you pray for her too? Across from the hotel where we were staying at there in Kadapa, there was a restaurant that we would go to because particular restaurant had a section in the far back that was actually air-conditioned. Most restaurants are not air-conditioned over there, but they knew that so that I could have stamina in the day to preach, that was very important for me, so that's what they would do. But you see a lot of heartbreaking situations. Here are two men right there at the doorway into that restaurant. I had some spare money that I brought over with me for benevolent purposes, so I gave some money there to them. If you look closely, you can see how the arms and legs and different appendages bend in ways that they're not supposed to. And over there in the back room, I noticed that as I could peek through the window pane that led to the main eating area, there was a woman who was sweeping there, and she had no nose. She had no nose. The man who happened to be our waiter there at that very restaurant, he was a dwarf, real small man. I'm taking this picture when I'm seated. And then not far from that restaurant itself, here was a man that was coming by, and he has a crutch and doubtless suffers from some problems with his legs. Here is a boy with an arm that's busted up. And I hope that what I share here will not be too disturbing, but Brother Shakar, right, even here with his own family, this is his daughter. She was staring at me, and here I'm the one that looks different, I talk different, I dress different, etc. So I thought, you know, to break up some of the awkwardness, I would try to engage her a little bit in conversation. And I thought I would do like a little interview. So I kind of kept the camera going, the camera feature on the phone. And so Balaswamy was translating. And during the course of the interview, the father said, he spoke up, "Show him your sixth finger." What? And she's young enough to, I guess, where I'm thinking she's not as sensitive about this as it might come about later on with her life. So he wanted this documented there for the film, for the little interview I was doing. And so she showed that to me. She happens to have two thumbs. It's a lot that we take for granted here in this country. The poorest place I've ever been would probably be Africa. I've made 3 preaching trips out there to Sierra Leone. Undoubtedly, the greatest poverty that you'll see is probably right there. But I will hasten to say this, that I've never encountered another place with more genetic and physical anomalies than you'd have there, say, like in India. You have men who are worshipped as gods. Here is Sai Baba. Now, he passed away in 2011. This is actually the hotel that we were staying at there in Kadapa. And I noticed that his image was just found all over the place. It had to have been that the owner of this hotel was a big-time believer in Sai Baba. And so right there at the reception desk, you can see an image of Sai Baba there with the floor that we were staying. I was on the third floor, right there in the hallway, another picture of Sai Baba with the wreath or garland hung around. And you could see down there in the lobby, it was a picture of someone bowing at his feet and worshiping him. This one kind of caught my eye. I said, you know, Balaswami, I've been here already a few times, but I don't know that I've really seen this one here before. Who exactly is this? And he said, oh, that's Lord Morgan. Lord Morgan. Lord Morgan, yes. Well, tell me about Lord Morgan. He said, oh, he is a famous god here in Chennai. I said, he? He? I mean, if you look at that, I think I see mascara and eyeliner and lipstick, but, you know, according to Balaswami here, you know, that's actually a dude. I thought about that Aerosmith song, Dude Looks Like a Lady. But so popular is Lord Morgan out there that this is actually the patron god, in a way, of that whole city of Chennai. And so one of the tourist spots out there would be a temple that's dedicated to him. And you can see that people will come down here and they will bathe. This water is regarded as holy water to them. What was also quite fascinating to me is that depending on where you would go, you could see certain gods of choice that were elevated above the others. But here before we left in Chennai, you can see now another picture of Lord Morgan with his brother, who happens to be the elephant-headed god, Ganesha. As we got there to Kadapa, shortly after leaving the airport, I noticed this way in the horizon, just starting to really pillar on up, was this gargantuan statue. And the driver here, Prasam, he noticed that my gaze was going right to this here. What is this all about? Right? He didn't even have to understand English to know what I was curious about. And so he said, oh, Venkateswara. Venkateswara. So I learned that was Venkateswara, an incarnation, they believe, of Vishnu, who's the preserver god in their religion. But everywhere you would go, whether you're talking about like hotel lobbies or there in the restaurant itself that you might be eating at or different public buildings, you would see pictures of Venkateswara. Now, his eyesight is obscured because he happens to have these two vertical lines that will come in front of his eyes. And what I was told about that is that they believe that that's necessary, or else that the god might start to destroy people. Oh. Yeah, but see, here was a restaurant that we were eating at, and here this man had a picture of Venkateswara right up there above the teal, right there. And here's another building with Venkateswara. What started to occur to me was this. Out in Kadapa, Venkateswara is the one who is really put up on a pedestal. But out there in Chennai, it was Lord Morgan. You remember there in the book of Acts when Paul was going around and he went there to Ephesus and there was this massive temple to Diana? And the people cried out for the space of 2 hours, great is Diana of the Ephesians. But then, as say, Paul would go over to like Athens, who happens to be the goddess of choice there? Athena. You have a similar concept that's still practiced in the world today when you go over to India. And what was also fascinating to me was this, was that even for a particular god or goddess, sometimes they would just worship one aspect of that god or goddess. So for instance, over here in Kadapa, I noticed as we were driving along late at night one night, way out in the distance, I saw this bright light. I said, well, what is that? And Balaswami said, that's a temple out there. I said, well, do we have time to go check that out? I said, sure, sure, we can do that. We can do that. So I said, well, who is this now? Who's being worshipped here? He says, oh, this is Lalita. Lalita. Okay, so tell me about Lalita. Well, actually, you remember the previous trip you made out here when we went to Mysore? I said, yes, yeah. Well, we went to a place called Chamundi Hills. I said, yeah, I remember that. He said, all right, well, that happens to be the same goddess. Lalita and Chamundi are the same. They're both the mother goddess. But what he was saying is, he says, okay, I'm going to try to break it down for you like this. It's a little like this. Lalita happens to be the happy aspect of that goddess. But Chamundi is the angry one. And so you see, they're trying to appease her anger. That's why they worship Chamundi. But they also want to delight in her jubilant, joyful nature. So they also worship her as Lalita. You know, you look at some of these temples, and I tell you what, maybe you can solve the poverty situation a good deal or make a dent into that if you could just liquidate the resources that you have stocked away over here. Now, the swastika is seen in a lot of these temples. And for us, that will conjure naturally some negative emotions. But for them, they love it. It's a symbol of peace and prosperity. And so over there, you're going to see the swastika. And it's just so sad to see the little children running around in these temples, because you know they're being indoctrinated at a very early age, being told that this is the truth, that this is what they should worship. And so I did what I could to keep my camera going, to take as many pictures as possible. I tell you what, I noticed on the way out, they had a biometrics system. You know what I mean by that? Okay, a fingerprint reader. You talk about the protection that's there. And I thought a lot about that story there that circulates around Gideon. There you had the father Joash, when that altar to Baal had been torn down and people were crying for the blood of Gideon. What did Joash say? Hey, what's the big idea here? Are you going to be the ones to plead for Baal? Let Baal plead for himself. I mean, if he's a god, he can avenge himself. And I thought a lot about that. I mean, you've got this tight-knit security system here. If that's a true god or goddess, why do you need all that? They have to protect them, don't they? This is over there in Mysore, where you can see the temple to Chamundi, who's the same goddess. They're burning incense there to her. And you can see more swastikas that are painted up over here. And there she is on her tiger, the angry goddess here, the angry form of the mother goddess, and her multiple arms with her swords. Well, there's hope for the future. You say, that sounds pretty bleak, right? But we are preaching the gospel of Christ in India. We're trying to train as many men as possible so they can carry on the work in our absence. And the questions that people will have out here are often the questions they'll have there too. I noticed that as I was doing a sermon on instrumental music and worship, there was one man way in the back who was twitching a lot and jerking around. And eventually he just got up and he started motioning with his hand. And during the sermon itself, I'm preaching, right? And so I say, Balaswamy, what are we going to do? So Balaswamy tries to interact with him a little bit. And I'm not kidding, but for about 45 minutes, we had a break in that whole sermon where I was involved in a debate with that man about whether or not instrumental music would be scriptural in our worship today. And he was trying to say, like you'd hear perhaps out over here too, when you look there at Ephesians chapter 5, verse 19, speaking to one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, he was trying to say that word psalm, solo in the Greek, that means that we can have a mechanical instrument. But I came prepared. I had an entire chart there with the scholars as they were talking about that particular Greek word solo. And in each and every case, they're all saying that in the New Testament, it means singing only. So we were trying to fire back that way, but he wasn't buying it. He wasn't having it. I said, look, you know, words have meanings. I mean, just when you talk about, say, the word baptism, we know that sprinkling is not going to be acceptable because words have meaning. And, you know, when you talk about the church, it's not a building, it's the people. Words have meaning. Well, Balaswami was a little rattled and addled after this debate. In fact, actually, the man who was protesting here, he got up and left for about 10 minutes. And he came back and he cooled down and was ready for the rest of it. But as we were driving off during our break to go and get some lunch, I noticed that, I can recognize this over here. Can we swing on in for a moment there? And Balaswami said, sure, that'd be okay. And I tell you, I was happy, because that's what I could identify with. Yeah. And Balaswami was a little sullen, like, you know, he was still having his mind drifting back there to that whole exchange and all. And I said, Balaswami, what's going on? He said, well, I was trying to tell him that, look, you know, we have to do teaching here, but when you get up and you leave like that, we're covering various arguments that you need to hear about so that you can have your questions answered, but you're gone. And so he was struggling with all of that right there, and I was saying, look, you know, just have a chicken leg here, calm down and relax. I said, look, you know, we can actually be happy that this is happening, because what it means is that the word is having an effect. People are processing. They're thinking about it. They can hear both sides. And so it's a good sign that it's happening. Because if we didn't do it, and people aren't talking and discussing and debating, then you have to wonder, how effective is this? Over there at that KFC, I noticed that there was a monitor, and they were running a commercial over and over again on a loop. And they're saying that's Colonel Sanders, but that don't quite look like the Colonel Sanders that I remember. They got the Indian variation on him. We had a man there at our studies, one of the preachers, that looked a bit like Colonel Sanders himself, perhaps, or maybe a far distant cousin too. One of the last places that we preached at over in Chennai was a place called Purim. And what's interesting here is that we actually met in a garden. We met there in a garden, an enclosed place. And what I told those who showed up is that when you look at that word paradise in the Bible, specifically it means an enclosed garden. And even though we're here, nestled between two buildings, and maybe we can appreciate the blessings that we have to study God's Word together, to learn about God and grow in His truth, so that we can, perhaps, Lord willing, make it to that paradise above where the tree of life is blooming eternally. The need for the gospel is certainly great in India. Many can be influenced for the truth. And so let's make sure that we be praying for Christians over there, be praying for the spread of the gospel, and thank you so much for the support that you gave me to go and participate in this great and important work. The gospel that we preach to them is also the gospel that's preached in all the world. It's also for you and for me. We have to believe in Jesus, the Son of God, repent of our sins, confess Christ, and be immersed in water for the remission of our sins, resolving then to be faithful until death to have that crown of life, which the Lord has promised to all who love His appearing. If we can be of help to you toward that end, please make your way down to the front while we stand now and sing. There's a